Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Oh my God, I'm going to be the babbling brook this morning today.
I want to hear it.
So much. Well, I totally forgot to say last week on air that I had this fabulous time with Christopher's kids in Newport Beach the week before. So we did our holiday celebration with them the week before, and they have puppies, which is like so perfect for our show today. One of them is only 3 months old, an Alaskan Shepherd. Oh. An Australian Shepherd.
Yeah.
So adorable. And then the other one is sort of a mix with some German Shepherd, and they played so adorably together. It was very sweet. And then it just continued. I mean, every day and every weekend, it's been either a house full of people in and out.
Wow.
Had time with my sister and my nieces. Tiffany went off to Philadelphia with her boyfriend last Wednesday. This is a story that you won't believe. You know how many times people were not getting on their flights and all that stuff. So they had a 9:40 flight. On and off the airline three times. They were boarded and whatever.
Wait, on the plane?
On the plane. Off the plane. On the plane. Off the plane. On the plane.
Oh,
off the plane.
My
the pilot
God.
Never showed up because the pilot was snowed in some other place in bumfuck wherever. And so a pilot cannot fly so many consecutive hours in a row without taking a break.
Right.
But this was, I can't say that I'm saying anything bad about this airline, but apparently Spirit Airline is just abominable. They didn't give them anything but $21 each for food at the airport. But you know, Tiffany and Michael, this is what you will just totally love, right? They meet a young lady at the airport who invites them to her home so that they can have a night's rest and have some food and then get back to the airport
so
the next day.
Sweet.
So isn't that amazing?
She
so
drove
amazing.
Them back to the airport the next day.
I think, unless they took public trip, I don't know. I think she was, she was on the same flight. So
yeah.
Isn't that amazing? So 18 hours later, they finally took off. She's texting me. I'm going, are you taking off? She goes, well, that's the threat. Well, that's the threat. So they're there. God knows they're coming back tomorrow night. Who knows if they'll ever get there. So been crazy. Totally crazy, but a lot
story.
Of fun. You know, Hanukkah, Christmas, because we sell everything. So sell everything?
You're,
no, we celebrate
festive. Yeah.
Me, you, what's up?
Oh, so we went to Great Wolf Lodge, that indoor water park.
Uh-huh. You've been there before.
Time. Yes. And this is so funny because I think the highlight was, I don't know if you've ever seen those vending like arcade machines. They have like really great prizes, like an iPad. Or they're so hard to do. They totally trick you. It's almost like a dart and like you have to get it exactly. And it's like, it's very difficult. First time my husband gets those Polaroid cameras, they're like Instamax or whatever.
No way.
I thought Remy was going to have like a cardiac arrest. He was so excited. They were like hugging. It was like they won $1 million.
Oh, I mean, my gosh.
Because it's so hard to do. So he did it on the first time. So that made, you know, everybody's holiday. It was great. I had such a great time. I love the water slides. And then they have this like boogie boarding, like basically like almost like a waterfall, and you sort of like jump and you boogie board down the waterfall,
and it's warm enough because it's
indoor. Totally the water was 84 degrees. It was indoor.
Perfect.
So it was heaven. I had such a great time.
Fun. And then you stay down there, and then the boys were exhausted the next day.
The boys were pretty tired, which is exactly how I like it. So it was really great. And one day was perfect. Like I feel like one day was enough because we had the water park on Saturday and Sunday, so it was great. And
that's
I saw Sing
awesome.
With my boys. They loved it.
Is it adorable?
It was so cute. And what's really funny is a lot of like 80s and 90s music in there too. So I like loved it. So I think all the parents like really liked it too because of the, you know, 80s music. But what's really funny is I remember when I was in like eighth grade, Sir Mix-a-Lot. Remember that song, I Like Big Butts and I Cannot Lie? Please tell me you're looking at me like I'm an alien. Okay. And anyway, it was huge. Okay. It was so popular. It was this rapper. He talked about how he likes big butts. He doesn't like skinny women. It was hysterical.
So this is in the
and
movie?
So in the movie, there's these three bunnies who sing it. And they're like, oh my gosh, I like big butts. And so like my kids are like obsessed with it. So then I played them the real version. And here's Remy going, I like them real thick and juicy. And then London saying, you know, shake that healthy butt. Like literally, I mean, it's hilarious. So anyway,
you have to get this on tape. You must get this on tape.
Yeah, it was
that
great.
Is fabulous.
Yeah,
oh my gosh.
Awesome. Yeah.
So neat. Oh, yay.
Yes.
So and then any big plans for New Year's?
My big plans is I tried 3 different sitters. Oh. All of them not available. Oh. So my plan is, but you know what? The last time I stayed up till 12, uh-huh. I can't even tell you. Swear to God, I don't remember the last time I was up at the New Year. So I'm not too worried about it.
Oh, no,
you know?
Your boys at midnight are going to wake you up and say,
probably.
Mom, the ball's dropping.
Exactly.
Yes, and we like big butts.
Exactly. So what about you? Are you doing anything crazy?
No, absolutely. The counter to that, no. I want to just have a... We're going to have our house to ourselves for a couple days because Tiffany is going off with my niece. His 21st birthday was
in
December when she was in
Vegas.
Spain.
Oh.
So she wants to celebrate with some of her friends and stuff in Vegas over New Year's.
That's crazy.
So there they go. And I was planning on going originally. I'm like, why would I do that to myself?
Yeah.
Why would I do that to myself? So I'll go to Vegas another time on my own terms.
Yeah.
Following around a 21-year-old for her is shots! More shots!
Yeah, exactly.
Like, no.
Right. Right.
So yeah, just to kind of be going to be mellow. Yeah.
Good.
All right. Well, we have a big show today. We're very excited, especially when we have a guest in studio. Last week, though, we had Andre and Mitra, two spiritual healers who gave us a lot of insights about the world and kind of how to cope with things. And, you know, it was beautiful energy.
Yes.
Yeah. Totally so thanks great. To them. And let's have a word with our sponsor, and then we will get right on to our guest.
Hello, this is Ian Oliver, author of the best-selling book, Getting Back on Top. Encouraging you to go visit my website, secondchanceatromance.com, where you can find a link not only to the book, but to lots of articles and interviews that will help you with your dating, relationships, and sex after divorce. And remember, all of the profits from our activities go to 2 very important children-related charities, so it's all going to a great cause, helping you and helping them. Go for it. Thank you.
For sponsoring our show and for your support. So today, very excitedly, we have an in-studio guest, Bill Benson, a board-certified behavioral scientist and licensed psychotherapist. A go-to expert in the psychology field, Bill has appeared on a variety of television programs, including Fox's Good Day LA, CBS's Woman to Woman, and NBC's Tonight Show. Bill is a recurring expert panelist for the Huffington Post Live and co-hosted 250 episodes of the cable talk show Doc Talk. He currently hosts the Mental Gym on Exaholics.com. Bill chairs the Peacock Foundation's board of directors and is the organization's clinical supervisor. This nonprofit provides animal-assisted therapy to at-risk youth in the Los Angeles area. Group sessions conducted by peacock-trained clinicians, I just love the way that sounds, peacock-trained clinicians, utilize rescued animals to reinforce social communication and coping skills. These services provide opportunities for participants to relate to, care for, and feel compassion toward other living beings. To date, Peacock programs have touched the lives of over 5,000 children. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming down here and being with us today.
Of course, of course. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, so I know there's a little side story about how the two of you met, so please do tell.
The woman who founded this organization, her name is Lisa Peacock, which I just absolutely love. Like, I feel like she either needs to work with animals or be like, work at NBC. You know how they have to work with them. Like, she's got to do
That's
something.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you can't, with that name, you can't not do anything.
It's funny because a lot of people think, being in the Peacock Foundation, they think we actually use peacocks as animal-assisted therapists. And peacocks tend to be kind of nasty creatures, unfortunately.
Sometimes, just beautiful.
Well, sometimes the pretty ones in life are not necessarily the nicest. But,
sure.
But, yeah, no, we use mostly dogs at this point, but we've used a variety of different animals. But not peacocks. But the reason the foundation is called the Peacock Foundation is because of Lisa Peacock. Yes.
Oh,
but yes, awesome. So how we discovered it is I got a letter from the school wanting to know if my son wanted to be included in this animal assisted therapy. Of course, I was doing cartwheels. I was so excited. And so, yeah, it was from the Peacock Foundation. And it's absolutely fantastic. They use the animals. I think he does it once a week. And they taught, I mean, and you can explain more to this, but I mean, my son loved it, talked about the animals, and he loved Tahoe and Buddha. And I got like the whole lowdown on the ages and, you know, everything. Aww. And it's just a wonderful organization. So I'm so blessed.
And another really cool thing we do, it's an 8-week program and it's no cost to the facility. So it's all, everyone volunteers at the Peacock Foundation. It's a nonprofit and we provide the service free of charge to the facilities. And what we do is we teach communication, cooperation, and compromise in the kids. So we're teaching emotional intelligence skills.
Yes.
And then we're also helping kids cope with certain circumstances. A lot of our services, some of our sites are domestic violence shelters, homeless shelters, foster home, group home settings. And then we also have the charter schools for kids after school programs. But yeah, we use the animals as a way to teach the kids how to get along.
And what kind of furry friends or non-furry friends do you use?
Well, lately we've been using mostly animals because we partnered with an organization that provides dogs specifically. But our history has been very colorful. We've had snakes, we've had lizards, we've had chinchillas, we've had monkeys.
Chinchillas?
Yes,
chinchilla. Chinchilla.
Do you know that chinchilla has more hairs per inch than any other animal on the planet? That's why they're so soft. They have such dense fur.
Oh,
and they're just amazing to touch.
What's a chinchilla look like?
The cutest. It's like a little fudge ball.
Is it like a hamster?
It looks like a hedgehog, kind of.
But very furry and fluffy and kind
very
of like thick.
And they're nice?
Oh, yeah. They're wonderful. They're wonderful creatures.
Do you know anything about sugar babies?
Sugar babies?
Yeah, they're like flying squirrels.
Oh, no, I do not.
Oh, my gosh.
I was thinking the candy.
I
think they're called sugar babies. Yeah, they're the little things that have become really popular pets. You have to order them, then you put them in a little pouch, like inside your chest.
What?
And they sleep all day, and then they bond to you so that they become actually kind of like your own baby.
Oh, God.
And then you let them out at night, but you have to be in an enclosed space because they start flying around. And then they come back, and they want to be cuddled, and they want to go to sleep. But a client of mine introduced me to this. I'm looking them up going, these are the cutest things on the planet. So for those of you who want a child but do not want a child right now,
yes,
this is the perfect thing because you can carry them anywhere.
Oh.
Pack and go.
I think I want one of these. I also want a penguin, too.
A penguin.
I think they're cool, right?
But they're not so nice, are they?
Penguins? I don't know about penguins.
Okay.
But my favorite is a kangaroo. I would love to hug a kangaroo.
You know, I have an interesting story. My partner and I were in Australia.
Yeah.
And we in the North Australia. I'm a diver, so I dove the Great Barrier Reef. One of the things I wanted to experience was kangaroos and wallabies.
Yeah.
And we actually hung out and actually lounged around with these kangaroos. It was amazing.
No way.
They're very deer-like. They're wonderful.
Yes.
Oh,
so cute. See,
wonderful.
I think I like that look because that's like my whippet. Like they just have that long face and they're just, I love them.
Well, I looked up an Italian greyhound today, I'm telling you, it's so funny. You guys are the second time in my life that I've heard of this. And today was the first time this morning before coming here. There was a picture of a puppy that I said to this person, this looks like a mini kangaroo.
Yes, exactly. They completely look
so
like that.
So cute. So, Bill, tell us, why are animals so important in our lives?
Well, because I do a lot of animal-assisted therapy, both in the foundation and in my private practice as well. I have a private practice in Hollywood. And I love animals because they're so in the moment. Mm-hmm. They don't overthink things. We tend to be, because we're intellectually based, we tend to live in our heads, and the mind is a computer, right? Mm-hmm. So if the mind's a computer, it's going to think and think and think, and it's a problem-solving tool. So it's going to come up with problems to solve even when there's not really problems. So what we do is we often tell stories to ourselves about ourselves and others. So we live in the past or we live in the future because there's a lot of data in the past or in the future. Data, the past being, of course, our memory, and the future, of course, being our imagination. But the problem with that is if I tend to, think in the past, I tend to think, oh, well, I should have done this and I should have done that. And if you exacerbate that long enough, you get depression. Mm-hmm. Or if you project out in the future, what if this happens? What if that happens? If you exacerbate that, you get anxiety. So animals live in the moment and they don't tell stories about themselves to themselves. So they're wonderful examples of kind of how to live here and now. It's a really wonderful kind of illustration of mindfulness training. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think animals are so important, because they're so present. And if we were more present and really aware of our surroundings and what's unfolding in front of us, then we can appropriately respond versus react from some story in our head about ourselves and about others. So that's why I think animals are so important in the work. And the other cool thing we do with the animals is a lot of animal-assisted therapy, I think most people think of, you know, the sweet old lady or the sweet old gentleman that takes their dog to the hospital. And there's some really wonderful studies that show that animals reduce blood pressure and help people recover more quickly. But what we do at the Peacock Foundation is, because we're all trained therapists, we use the animal to deepen the conversation. Mm-hmm. So, for example, one of our sites is a homeless shelter. So, because we partner with Pet Partners, and Pet Partners is a large organization, and so the animal handler, two therapists, and a group of about 8 to 10 kids. So, oftentimes we're in a scenario like a homeless shelter, and perhaps the dog that we're using was a stray.
Oh.
See? So that dog was homeless at one point in its life. So we just simply convey that fact, and then the kids start projecting onto the dog and identifying with the dog. So it's a way to deepen the conversation about them. The other thing is, you know, if Fluffy, we say to a kid, you know, what do you think Fluffy's feeling right now? And the Fluffy's feeling sad. Well, the kid is projecting his or her own feelings onto the dog, and then we can take that and use it and deepen the conversation.
So it's a real Rorschach.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it really is.
How beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah, I would imagine you get some really interesting information from doing that. Like, you really get to the depth of what somebody might be hiding.
Group therapy, then they know the other kids. You know, then you say to the other kids, who else is feeling like Fluffy? Who else is feeling sad or scared or alone or confused? And then you realize you're not alone in this.
Right.
So it teaches empathy also.
Absolutely.
Yeah, crossover empathy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you get the range of kids who are like obsessed, some are frightened? Like, do you kind of see the whole range?
All kinds. And in fact, back in the days when you used to bring the spiders and snakes in, I kind of love that in a way, because we could deal with fear.
Uh-huh.
We could deal with anxiety that way, with those triggers, and, you know, kind of flood them, to talk therapist speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
we could
really expose the kid and talk the kid through the perceived threat or the fear that they have about the animal. And we do get that with even dogs, because it's interesting. Dogs have been hanging out with us for about 20,000 years, and they've actually evolved with us.
Mm-hmm.
So, they've actually looked at fossils, and our brains grew bigger, and their brains actually atrophied a bit because we learned to rely on each other, where we relied on the dog's athleticism. So their athletic abilities were enhanced, where they didn't have to think as much because they could rely on us for our intellectual.
So we got lazier and they got stronger, but
got
a little smarter.
Well, and because they protected our crops and our cattle and things like that, we really would be different beings today if it were not for dogs. So we have this kind of, dogs are kind of man's best friend, because we have this biological kind of, you know, journey with them. So as a result, kids tend to immediately like dogs.
Mm.
But if the little boy says, oh, doggy, or the little girl, doggy, the toddler, it's the parents that usually go, no.
Yes,
and
that
pull
is
the
true.
Kid away and kind of teach the kids to be afraid.
Yes.
And obviously, you don't let a kid next to a growling dog. But it's interesting that because there is that connection, and even a biological one seemingly, or evolutionary one, kids will respond well to animals and be curious about animals and excited to see animals. Well, there again is an opportunity to teach kids about taking their turn and being patient and structure, because then you can use the dog like a reward system and waiting their turn to, you know, and petting the dog in a certain way. So you're teaching the kids all sorts of learning, spatial, cooperative, you know, emotional, all sorts of different levels.
It's fantastic.
I have a cute little story about this, exactly what you're saying, and this just happened last week. So about a year and a half ago, my neighbors, who had three young girls, they moved away, and I've stayed in touch with them because these little girls used to come over. We were sort of like their pseudo-grandparents. They used to come over because they loved my cats, and they loved hanging out with me. So they were, originally, they were 3 and 6, and then they had another one. And so, you know, they moved away when they were about four, seven, and 10 kind of thing. But they had been around my cats a lot. So now the younger one, who hadn't been around as much, they came to visit this last week. And you could see the two older ones of all the things that I had been teaching them about how they had to be slow and patient, particularly with Puppy Cat, who thinks he's a dog, and to make sure that she was very slow and gentle, because she wanted to race right up to the cat and just grab the cat. The cat was very scared of that energy and actually hissed. And he was saying, I don't know you well enough for you to do that. So it was very, by the end of the evening, she sat there and she was watching and she was waiting. And eventually the cat came over and cuddled with her. It was very cute.
So cute.
It's amazing how much children do learn through how they have to sort of nurture and take care of animals.
Absolutely. The other thing about an animal, I'm a strong believer in having a family dog or a family cat when children are young.
Yes.
Because it does teach responsibility. And then oftentimes it's the child's first acquaintance with death, actually. And then talking through that and normalizing that process as just one of, as the transition of life. So the animals are so invaluable in so many different ways.
Yes. Maybe you could tell us, because you do specialize in this, that when a child, let's say maybe at two or three different age ranges, loses an animal to death, maybe you could give our listeners a couple of ideas about what parents can say to their child, what's like the not good things to say, what are the good things to say, and then how quickly would you advise parents allowing a child to have another pet soon after that one's passing? Is that too many questions at once?
Yeah, that's a lot of questions, okay. But I'll try here.
So let's say a young child, right? Let's say a child somewhere around 5 years of age.
Sure.
And loses, Fluffy the dog.
Right. Well, as we all know, because we're all therapists here, developmentally you have to...
Different.
Right. Different stages of development, brain function, understanding, awareness. So a five-year-old might be different than a 10-year-old.
Sure.
Of course.
That's what I'm saying, a couple
different
ages.
So the first thing to do is to get in the moment and assess the child and ask the child get curious about what the child is feeling about what's going on and how aware the child is. And more or less being there to support the child's curiosity as well about the process. If the child is upset, what exactly is it that's making the child upset? And if they're baffled and don't understand where Fluffy went, then you can, address that in a way. But always tracking the child to stay appropriate, because you don't want to overwhelm the child, obviously. But it is a really wonderful – wonderful is a weird word to say when we're talking about bereavement.
Yeah.
But it is a very effective way to introduce little beings to the process of life,
And death.
Well, recently my son, we just got him some fish, and one of them passed away. Mm-hmm. And it was like – my husband and I were like more sad than like Remy and London were, But it was a really nice introduction. I mean, as nice as it can be, to sort of like, this is, the process of life and death. And we had a fish funeral and we said some nice things about Nemo and, his name was Nemo. But I totally agree with you. It's like, you kind of have to be where the kid is, because you're right. It's like, I think sometimes parents assume like, they're so depressed and then it can show in different ways, especially with kids. I know they can act out rather than be sad.
Right.
For something like that. So
they can often blame themselves. Kids often blame themselves. Even like in situations of divorce and things like that, kids will think that they've done something wrong. And so we have to normalize that process as well and say, no, animals live and die.
Sure.
And that's the way things
that
are.
That is the circle of life. And how soon after the loss of a pet is it reasonable for the family to then engage in maybe getting a new one?
Well, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, of course, we have the different stages of grief and things like that, and some people prescribe to that model, some people don't. But I think you have to go through a process of awareness and understanding, and the best way to do that is to check in, because the last thing you want to do is just replace the pet with another pet.
Right, exactly.
Because then
a lot
never
of people
fully,
do that.
Yes, they do. And then when that pet dies, then it's even more, because they haven't dealt with it. And then it's cumulative, isn't it?
So, and then they're upset that the animal isn't behaving like the other animal.
I was thinking
animal,
that.
That's right, which isn't fair to the animal, the current
exactly.
animal.
Exactly,
right?
Just like rebound relationships with people.
Yes. Right, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I've had clients that will even rename, the new pet the same name as the old pet.
No identity.
Really?
Then.
Yes. Yeah. And then, but then, you know, again, Fluffy's not acting like Fluffy One.
Yes.
So what do you do with that?
Sure.
See? So it is, like anything, is we have to confront these things and face these things and, you know, figure it out. And sometimes that's where therapy comes in.
Yeah.
Right? Because as therapists, we all are there to kind of be the objective person to enter, to interject that kind of reasonableness.
Yeah. So I would say with what you're saying, the key is where the child or children are ready, not when the parents are ready, because the child's readiness may be very different.
Wow, you just said something so brilliant. I can't stand it.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Right? Because so often, you know, it's that mistake. And, you know, it's not good parenting. It's good enough parenting. I mean, as parents, we all make mistakes, and we're all human. But it's you know, basically our intention. We don't want to hurt anybody.
Sure.
And so it's talking through those things and learning from our mistakes. That's how we grow and evolve as human beings.
Yes.
But oftentimes, I think that the flaw that happens with parents is they don't think it through from the child's perspective. Mm-hmm. I'll give you me as an example. Mm-hmm. So I was raised in the Midwest, and I was from a very athletic family. Well, I was a sickly child. I was in and out of the hospital a lot when I was a kid. And my dad's solution was to tough me up by throwing me into hockey. So at 6 years old, he was taking me to hockey, you know, at 6 a.m.
Wow.
And I didn't like it. And it was kind of traumatizing.
Sure,
but he was trying, you know, it was from his perspective. He was trying, but he wasn't considering
you.
Me.
Yeah.
So
sure.
That's, you know, and I don't fault him for it.
Sure.
Know, at all.
Right. But it had an effect.
That's what happens.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So often. So it and the key there is to slow down, isn't it? I mean, we're so brain-based, and brains like to crunch data quickly.
Absolutely.
So if we slow the tempo of the song, then the song breathes, and we can respond versus react.
This is fascinating, but pause one moment.
Sure.
We do have to say a word from our sponsor.
Hello, this is Ian Oliver, author of best-selling book Getting Back on Top, encouraging you to consider using my relationship consulting services where I help people transition from being married to divorced to single, one of the most difficult transitions in life. You can check out some of this information on my website, secondchanceatromance.com. And remember, all of the profits from our activities go to two very important children-related charities, so it's all going to a great cause, helping you and helping them. And I look forward to working with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian Oliver. Okay, we are back here with our guest today, Bill Benson, a board-certified behavioral scientist and licensed psychotherapy who does pet therapy. And this is so exciting. Okay, so can you give us one of your favorite stories about something that maybe happened in the room with, of course, not divulging confidentiality, you know?
Well, there's a. I really think that we all want to connect, and we all want to connect with someone or something, and have a meaningful relationship. I think one of the I'm going to say oddest, and I don't mean to say that with judgment, but I had a pet bereavement call once with a middle-aged woman who lost her goldfish, and to the point where, but she was telling me passionately about this goldfish and how she even tried to resuscitate it with a straw. So you know, that might sound silly or ridiculous.
No,
but,
not to
right,
me.
But okay.
Yeah.
So
goldfish meant something to her.
That's right.
Clearly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So. I think we all want to connect, and animals are a great way to do it. Animals are a great, and going back to the work with the kids too, if we can get them to have a relationship with an animal and begin to trust an animal, then it's a great conduit to trusting other people as well. So animals are just awesome.
Oh, well, as you guys were talking about your discussion, I was thinking about something I had seen on This American Life on NPR, and they were doing a segment on animals that were cloned. And this woman had a cow named Chance, and she cloned it and named the second one Second Chance.
Oh,
and it was really funny. And she was saying that for the most part, it was like Chance, but there were certain little like things that he didn't do that Chance did, or that were, you know, like not nice or something. And it was really hard for her because it looked like Chance, but it wasn't acting like Chance. It's so strange. And it's just a really interesting concept about, you know, cloning animals. So my husband and I had a discussion about cloning Moose. Our dog Moose, because we are just obsessed and he is the sweetest soul. But I mean, I think part of that, it's exactly what you're saying, is I was thinking, it's almost avoiding the grief process by doing that. You're kind of saying, like, I don't want to deal with that pain and that, you know, hurt I'm going to feel when this animal passes. But I feel like it's inevitable. You need to feel it, because at some point, you know, it might come out sideways or a different way, or it's going to catch up with you. But we all need to do the work of the grief.
I like to reframe it when a client comes to, in with those circumstances, because I like to see it as you're grieving because you love the animal or the person so much, and you're actually honoring the person because you're feeling that loss.
Sure.
But again, I don't think that person or animal wants you to struggle.
Oh.
So, yeah. But you're feeling your feelings because that relationship meant so much, which shows me you have the capacity to be that loving. You see? So you get them to start thinking
of a different way. That's a great way to look at it. Yeah.
And how valuable that attachment is, right?
Yes.
And then I had another question, too. So we want to be where the kids are, but what if, sort of, and I could see my son saying this, that, you know, if our dog passes, I could see him immediately saying, okay, let's get another one, because they almost want to rush through the process. And how do you get them to slow down and kind of grieve?
You normalize it and make it okay. Make it okay to be sad.
Yeah.
You make it okay to, you know, and it's interesting from a cultural standpoint, that's why we have funerals, right? The stages of grief and this. So we formalize it and share it because It kicks us past the denial phase.
Yeah.
So kids just want to deny it.
Yes.
And just go on with the next one and don't hurt and don't feel feelings. Well, we have to be in touch with our feelings in order to be, you know, contributing members of society as we grow up. So these are wonderful opportunities for us to talk through things.
And I'd add one more piece. I think normalizing the denial phase as well as just part of the process to say that, of course, you want another pet because you don't want to feel these, and just being empathetic to that need. You know, it's kind of like when we tell a kid, well, I know you want that red truck, but you just got a blue truck, so we're not going to get you the red truck for some time. You know, it's not just because you want something doesn't mean there's something wrong with you.
Sure.
It's absolutely part of the process.
I heard something a while ago that I really think was powerful, and that is there's three stages of death. There's the biological death, when the being dies, and then there's the ceremonial death, which helps us through the denial phase, which is usually, you know, the funeral. And then there's the death that occurs when the last person that knew the person or animal dies, because these beings live on in our memory. And we can take what we learned from that relationship and apply it as we continue to live our lives.
Sure.
And I think that's kind of another great way to reframe things and to get people to come at it from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. It really, wow, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Now, I know you do the pet therapy, but can we ask you a couple personal questions about our own pets?
Uh-oh.
Yes or no?
Well, yeah, sure. Again, though, I am trained in human psychology. I'm not Cesar Millan.
Sure.
So, you know. But
you work with the animals so much that you know a lot about their behavior.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Because I wonder if you've even seen this. So the one of the kitties I was talking about, Puppy Cat, who hissed at this little girl. So actually, he was never a hisser. But years back when they first started coming over, he got nervous because one of them came into his territory in the closet where he was hiding, right, and asleep, you know, and because he didn't like people that he didn't know and all that stuff. So now he's actually become kind of cranky and a bit of a hisser, which he wasn't before. And I don't know if there's something that I could be doing that could help him to feel more comfortable, or if he's trying to tell me something, or, you know, how to repair that relationship with him. He doesn't never hisses at me.
Right.
Ever.
Okay,
right.
So it's just strangers.
Strangers, but he used to be much friendlier and all this stuff. Oh, it's not like they did anything to traumatize him. They just were being kids, but he wasn't used to that. And I just want to help him to feel safe and comfortable, you know, as much as possible. So any recommendations, like, put him in another room when people come over?
I'm going to lump your kitty with the rest of us here a little bit, because trauma is so interesting. Now, the difference between animals and people is let's use an analogy. Say, so my dog Oliver, who's this little 10-pound wonderful Shih Tzu terrier mix. So,
and you call him a...
The jack shit.
I love that. Great.
Oliver, the jack shit.
Yeah, yeah. And he's beloved by many. He accompanies me to my office often. But for example, he doesn't wake up and thinking. He doesn't wake up in the morning thinking, I wonder if the door's going to knock. I wonder if somebody's going to come over. Mm-hmm. That we do.
Yeah.
But if there's a knock on the door, he's going to bark.
Right.
See. Mm-hmm. So they're in the moment. Mm-hmm. Right. So they're appropriately in the moment, or they're maladaptively in the moment. Maybe your cat's going to hiss when there's no need to.
Yeah.
But they're doing it because they're triggered.
Mm-hmm.
So just like people get triggered, mm-hmm. right? We complicate a little bit more because, again, we think, I wonder if somebody's going to knock on the door today,
mm-hmm.
right? But it's about being in the moment and being triggered. So it's really about flooding the cat just like you would flood a human being and try to show them that just because I open the closet door and he's in the closet doesn't mean I'm a threat.
Mm-hmm.
So you normalize it.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the same way you would a person.
So you're saying practice kind of having people come over and open the closet? Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but what if he then ends up biting or scratching them?
Well, then I would say keep that at a distance, or maybe then don't, you know, then again, you're going to have to limit the exposure and limit his life a little bit.
Or I'm wondering if you accompany the stranger.
Well, I do usually. He'll come
kind of
crawl under me or something.
Okay.
But
that's interesting too, and I'm going to go, and I'm quoting Cesar Millan here, I'm not quoting Bill Benson, but sometimes animals want to protect you.
Oh.
Yeah.
So maybe they're hissing because they're protecting you. So maybe by you holding the animal, that's perhaps
better.
No,
it's encouraging him to believe
because
that
he's protecting
I need him
you.
That way.
Right.
That's really interesting. That could be it. That's a great call.
Oftentimes, I will hand Oliver's only 10 pounds, but I will hand the client Oliver, and they will hold Oliver, and as a result, Oliver will start licking their face, kissing their face, or whatever.
Right, because
to get him over the initial right. Because if I'm holding him, then they're seeing that thing out there is not you.
And, so interesting.
And you know, animals are very protective. So I don't know, play around with that.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Oh, I love my kitties.
Yes.
But again, with the kids, it's so important to have an animal in a child's life. In a lot of these scenarios, after-school programs, obviously these kids go home and perhaps have pets, but like in the domestic violence shelters or the homeless shelters, they don't.
Mm.
So it's a really great opportunity for them to interact with an animal.
Yeah.
Is there a training that the animal goes through with you to become a...
It's just like a canine good citizen certificate. Uh-huh. So we don't want to... There are those animals that... These are emotional support animals, mm-hmm. and that's different than actually having a actual animal that does a task like, you know,
like a service dog.
Like a service dog.
Yeah.
That they're trained to detect epilepsy, or they're trained to, you know, sniff out cancer, or they're trained to accompany someone that's blind.
Sure.
That's a skill they have to learn. But with emotional support animals, again, animals are so in the moment, and they draw people into the moment, and they draw the person. We so often get caught in our thoughts and in our head that having something outside of ourselves, you know, we get out of our heads and into our lives. So if we're nurturing something outside of ourselves, we're not necessarily caught up in that rumination.
Sure.
So, to answer you, they have to be well behaved. They have to respond well to a chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Like part of the training when I got my dog certified was, you know, they have you in a room with wheelchairs and crutches and people and hustle bustle and things like that to make sure that the dog doesn't react negatively or cower in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And even with kids, you know, maybe don't know how to pet an animal.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have kind of a metal animal that's not going to... But the animal handler always has the option to take the animal outside of the room if they feel the animal is threatened or upset in any way. But generally, the kids just love the animals, and as a result, they are very careful with the animals.
Mm. Moose could be a therapy dog.
Moose is a therapy dog, which I was going to tell you about. Yeah, he's certified therapy dog, and I bring him to my son's school. And it's amazing because he only has one eye. He had to get an eye removed from glaucoma.
I mean, that's not wonderful, but that's wonderful.
It really is because the kids come over and they say, "What happened?" There's this empathy. And I say, "He had an eye disease." And they said, "Oh, does it hurt him?" And, you know, it's interesting to some people feel bad for him. And other people are really fascinated. Like one person must be like, "Well, what happened to the eye? Where is it?" Like, it's just really funny.
Of course.
You know, like, but to see people's reaction and then you know, to have something that's different, you know, and some kids were like, oh, you know, and like, it's just really, really fascinating to have that disability, you know, with the dog. So it's really cool.
Oh, that's neat.
He's the best.
And again, you could use that to deepen the conversation with children. How do they feel about, you know, disabilities? How do they feel about, you know, kids and people that have, you know, disabilities?
That are different. Yeah.
That are different. Yeah.
Sure. But I agree. Moose is definitely mellow. Like, and you have to be mellow with my kids for sure. So he's trained.
What, if any, are the downsides to pet therapy? Are there any?
Wow. I've never been asked that question. Are there downsides to pet therapy? Well, obviously, if you're allergic to the animal, that's not a good idea.
That's true.
But oftentimes, animals just create another intervention in a way to face, even if you're afraid of an animal, and the animal, you know, is obviously benevolent and been certified as a benevolent being. It's a great opportunity for somebody to get a little exposure to that animal, which is just going to give them an option. That doesn't mean they have to go buy a dog or a cat, but it does give them an option so that they don't have to run away from a dog or a cat.
Mm-hmm. Can we certify people as a benevolent being?
Or? Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Right?
That would be so
it's
funny.
Like, you know, you enter benevolent beings
like
only.
Like a little tattoo or something.
That's
you know.
So funny.
Dr. Seuss, I think the X's and the O's. I don't remember which one that was. But
you know. Right. Funny. Yes. Yeah. I don't remember either. But yes, you're right. Yes.
Yeah.
So we'll have a no malevolent beings allowed.
That's
only
so
benevolent.
Funny.
Right.
Well, and if you're on the fence, all right, we'll give
although
you a shot.
Although the best way to indicate whether somebody's malevolent or benevolent is to be in the moment, right?
Sure.
So we're back to that whole concept. Is the best way to assess anything is to be in the moment with it and not be clouded with overthinking things and out of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So
I was watching the news and they had a duck on an airplane and that was somebody's emotional support animal.
Yeah.
And I think I saw a turkey. I love this. Like to me, this is heaven. It's just so great. I mean, I think it's wonderful. I'm all about it. So,
you know, rabbits make amazing therapy animals too, especially the loppy-eared ones.
Oh, they're
stuff.
So cute.
They're so docile and so loving, you know,
so
and
sweet.
People have I think there's a lot of misunderstandings about bunnies. You can really, I had a little Bun-Bun. His name was Bun-Bun.
Oh.
And he was so cute. He would actually come and cuddle and he wasn't, and he would play with the cat. And
really?
This was the cats before these two. And yeah, it was the only little thing that calmed down the cat because the cat was a rescue cat who was very, very agitated by the other cat's existence who was still alive after his brother had passed. And it was that little bunny would go up to the cat and just sit right next to the cat and they would both go to sleep together.
Wow.
It was so cool.
That is so
because
adorable.
The bunny didn't have a story about the cat.
No.
See what I mean?
No
so
story.
He didn't
hear
the cat because he didn't have a story about the cat.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That makes
yeah.
So
and the
much
cat
sense.
Didn't, you know, wasn't upset by the bunny. Was upset by the other cat, but not by the bunny.
Wow.
So it was,
well, and animals are very intuitive too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Horses are notorious for this. They, you know, they spook because they really sense energy.
Wow.
And so if you're tense, that's why most dogs fight. It's not because they don't like each other, but because the people on the other end of the leash get tense, and then they want to protect their person
owner,
that's right. And so that's when it's they sense tension.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Good
sense. So I have one final question for you. I want to know kind of what are the Peacock Foundation's goals in 2017, but I'll let you think on that while we have one last word from our sponsor.
Okay.
Are you frustrated by the tremendous challenges that so many millions of people face in your dating life? If you are, we have your solution. Come talk to me, Ian Oliver, author of best-selling book Getting Back on Top, and my website, secondchanceatromance.com. We can help you. And remember, all of the profits from our activities go to two very important children-related charities. So it's all going to a great cause, helping you and helping them.
Thank you so much, Ian Oliver.
Yes. Okay, so, back to the Peacock Foundation goals for 2017, Bill Benson.
Yes. Well, the Peacock Foundation has been in existence for almost 15 years now.
Good job.
And thank you. And we've always been very grassroots, and we want to expand. We want to provide our services to a wider range. Right now, we're just in L.A., the L.A. area, and we would like to expand our services. And again, we're a free program. We're a free 8-week program. And by the way, I didn't mention, but each week is a different theme. So there's anger, there's cooperation, there's different emotional themes to each week. It's a very structured program. So the kids kind of get a get a nice wound round basis of emotional intelligence in the 8-week program. But our goal for 2017 is just doing things like this, getting the word out, letting people know we're around, letting people know we're a free service. So if they know of a site or a school that would benefit from this, they would can call us up and we can try to make that happen. And then, of course, that takes funding, so we're also grant writing and trying to get funds that way. And then people can always donate by logging on and to our website, which is www.peacockfoundation.org. And if you can't donate financially, then maybe you can donate some time.
Yeah.
We're always interested in people serving on committees and developing the organization in that way. So.
And who knows? Maybe there's some angel investors listening out there.
That would be wonderful.
Take that on. We're encouraging you. If you're out there and you're interested, please contact Bill Benson. So the best way for somebody to reach you directly would be to go to that website?
Yeah.
Or,
Or bill@peacockfoundation.org. That's my email address. And,
okay.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun and very rewarding.
Nice.
Yeah.
You've been a great guest.
Yes.
Thank you so much
for
being on our show.
Much.
Oh, my gosh. I'm excited.
I know. It just warms my heart. I feel like it was a wonderful show to end the year. You know, like I feel like it's just super healing.
It is the end of the year.
Yeah.
This is frightening.
I know.
Oh, my gosh. No, really, it is. Sunday, that's just right around the corner.
I know.
Oh, my gosh. Well, next week we have a fabulous show for you also with our guest Kent Heckenlively, is that how you pronounce it?
That's what I would say.
I think it's Heckenlively, who is a JD, so an attorney. Mm-hmm. He wrote a book called Inoculated, How Science Lost Its Soul to Autism. So
really interesting.
I know we're having some great topics.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very different.
So let's make 2017 fabulous, Kelly.
Yes, let's do it. See you next year.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.